I'd like to introduce today's speaker, Paul Hinman. As you all know, the recent election yielded some amazing, I don't know what to say, 86% of the majority government is elected by less than 25% of the eligible voters. This questions the health of a democracy in Alberta. Low turnout at the polls is symptomatic of serious lack of commitment by the electorate. Voter apathy may have been helped by years of domination of conservative governments and a perceived lack of viable alternatives. If informed debate is the lifeblood of democracy, the time may have come to consider reforming our political process. How can we ensure that issues of concern to Albertans are subjected to rigorous debate at the legislature before they become law of the land? Now on the outside, Paul Hinman will provide us with all the answers. I'd like you to welcome Paul Hinman to SACPA.
So how many minutes do I have?
25.
Well, it's a real pleasure to be here again. I think democracy is exciting, it's wonderful. But boy, oh boy, is it ever frustrating at times. And all of the great things in life, you know, whether, you know, when you're trying to discover a new vaccine or solve something, and you talk to those people that are in the research and in the work, it's just hours and hours of painstaking struggle and looking for answers. And then when you get those answers, can we implement them? Or is it an economic problem? Is it a political problem? And the world struggles to progress, and we just don't reach the pinnacle that we could with the knowledge that we have. And I always say that the biggest struggle that we're having with, if you look back 50 years, look back 500 years, and you see the wonderful advancements that we've made in science and medicine and astronomy, just all of those things, we've made huge leaps forward, especially in the last 20 to 30 years in our discoveries. But yet if we look at democracy, has it changed much? Do we see it flourishing? Is it doing well? Are the people of the world prospering? And the answer comes back to haunt us more often than not, that no, people are and continue to struggle in a world where we have so much technology on feeding the world, on solving the energy problems, but yet are we progressing? And I say at a very slow rate. And so I hope today to address what I think a few things that would help the voter apathy, the complacency, the disengagement of Albertans, that we can continue to be the light of the world and the opportunity where people look to see where progress is being made and the quality of life is great, and we can, what would I say, allow other areas to follow our lead in freedom and prosperity and peace and injustice. And so a few of the things that I guess I wanted to start off with, and I guess I thank Knud for making those observations that less than 25% of the people are holding 85% of the power right now. And so some of the proposals that I feel that we could and should implement are doable now because the government is in control and power. And so therefore they could release that power and turn it back to the people if they desire, but I don't believe they have that desire. They're far more, engaged in the question that I feel that I hear them ask more than anything else is, what do we do to get reelected? What do we do to retain our power? What do we do to control the people? And that seems to be their focus that I observed when I was involved on the inside, and I continue to observe on the outside. And just in the last few days, you know, we've heard a few more things. For example, the gag law and how much can be spent. They didn't like the attack ads. They didn't work, but yet they don't want that to happen in the future. They could spend millions of dollars on promoting their ideas, but they want to stop individuals, corporations, or unions even, what would I say, private enterprises and what I call good organizations, volunteer organizations, they don't want them to be able to speak out, and that to me is a real slight on democracy, and we can't afford to go there. But last time, I just want to go back a little bit to the 2004 election where I got in by a squeaker, and this time I lost by even a smaller squeaker. But it is great for the people to be able to go out and vote according to their conscience and to be able to do it in secret ballot. Many times, and the first thing for intimidation is to not have a secret ballot. And if we go back to Alberta's history, the first elections were people getting together in a room, speeches made, and show of hands decided, and an open voting system. And so I'm grateful that we've moved to that next system. But when we look at the situation last time, there were 21 opposition MLAs that held 51% of the vote versus the Tories 62 that had 49% of the vote. And to me, that's one of the things that I think is a critical as I looked at it and assessed it on what we could do to engage Albertans, because many of them felt that, well, my vote didn't make a difference and one person can't make a difference, and we need to change that. The first thing, though, that I feel is critical is that if people are not empowered and have the ability to feel like they can make a difference, apathy and complacency sets in very quickly. And I'm a huge believer in recall. I think that it really changes the dynamics to where, as an individual that's elected, to know that at any time, those that I represent could sign a petition, and not an easy one. I think at least 30 or 40% of the electorate would have to sign that to toss somebody out of office. And I could give many examples, but because of time, I don't want to go into them. But David Emerson, perhaps the best one that I like to refer to. We also had an elected individual here in Lethbridge that it took us a long time to eliminate, whereas I think had a recall been in place in 2 or 3 weeks, I think the signatures would have been taken and that individual taken from office. David Emerson, he crossed the floor right after the election. And what could the people do? Nothing. Wait till the next time. And if we had recall, and those who lost by a small amount could go out and work on it, you would engage Canadians, Albertans, to say, well, I can make a difference, and he isn't doing what he represented. Or you find out that, well, he did the right thing, and we're happy, and he's got the support. But the people need to be empowered. And so recall, to me, is critical. Another small one, and I don't know that it would make a difference other than that for the people who want to run, I do believe in fixed election dates. And there are always pros and cons, you know, what should and could we do. And when we look at municipal government, well, fixed election dates certainly don't up the vote. So I don't know that it would up people's engagement, but it would allow those people who want to engage in it a starting date. And it's so hard in politics to try and gear up and be ready when you don't know whether they're going to call one last fall, this spring, next fall, and they're waiting for the economic advantage or when something happens to spring it on you. It's very difficult. And so I think set election dates more than anything would just level the playing field for those who want to try and make a difference. And the one though that I feel that would perhaps really change the thought of Albertans is the funding for elected parties. And when I was in there, I said it, and now that I'm out, I still believe in it. But what I would like to see is if a party can get an elected MLA, and I don't, you know, whether it's the Green Party, the Wild Rose Party, whatever it is, if they can get elected, that the funding for that caucus would be reflected in the number of votes. Last time when I first got elected in 04, the funding for my caucus worked out to 77 cents per vote that we received across the province. The NDP, it was around 4.90, the Liberals 5.25, and I'm not going to get into the Tories, they kind of have unlimited, but 5.50 for their elected MLAs, and then they have cabinet and all of that. But one of the things when I talk to people to be able to say, you know, it makes a difference, because had we been funded at $5 a vote, and that's roughly what the funding is, but it's skewed. But if every Albertan knew, well, boy, if we can get a Green person in there, if we can get a Wild Rose person in there and we vote, we could get some funding for them to do their research, to get the message out to Albertans, and to raise up that public debate that I'm so proud of SACPA and your history here of 31 years plus of having that informed public debate. But it was a real economic difficulty for myself with 77 cents per vote to try and run an office. It's already overwhelming, and as Bridget can attest, and her daughter and her mother, though, that their job just went up threefold with only with the reduction in the number of MLAs. How do they do that? Because the votes only went down around 10,000. And so their funding would be very similar to what it was last time because the voting was there. The same with the NDP. I haven't even checked with the government to see what they decided for NDP funding, but generally their philosophy has been, well, those two fight, we'll fund both of them to allow them to fight because that makes us look better. And so they use that divide and conquer. So I would like to see the funding where if an elected member of a party gets in there, the people of the province would know that $5 would go to the funding of that caucus, and it would be much more, sustainable funding that you would know that exists. The other real big change that I would like to see, that's a small change compared to having an Alberta Senate or something, but I would like to see what I call a double vote in the legislature. The first vote could be the MLAs, or would be the MLAs, on passing legislation. And I think that the free vote is much more critical. They always say you're free to vote however you want, but if you do it that way, you'll be ousted out of caucus or out of the party, so fall in line. But it's a free vote. You have your opportunity. And the thing that when I talk to backbench MLAs, say, well, that's not a hill to die on. And so they don't get to fight too many battles because there really isn't a free vote. And so free vote needs to be in place, and recall would help balance that because, for example, one of our candidates up north, his area very much wants the Canadian Wheat Board. And he's talked to me many times, and he says, absolutely, in the House that you'd be free to vote and represent your people according to their desires, not the fact that myself, I would like the freedom to choose whether I want to be part of the wheat board. And so free votes are critical. But with a double House vote, what would happen in my world, if it could spread out there, is the first vote would be the MLAs. They have a huge majority. But last time, the 21 opposition MLAs, if we were to vote against it in the second vote, which would be the number of Albertans that voted for the different MLAs, and kind of like a shareholder in an industry, you know, I have 10,000 shares in this company, Knut only has 1,000, and a weighted vote, that would make a huge difference. And last term, we could have stopped the government at any time on the second vote because we had 11,000 more votes in opposition than the government did. So I think that would make a huge difference where Albertans would get out and say, no, my vote will make a difference. It's very close. And again, it puts power back in the people's hands. And so I think that's important. Another one that's frustrating, and we see this going up through the middle or splitting the vote, and I feel that Stelmach and company did a wonderful job last time of dividing and conquering when he says a vote for the Alliance is a vote for the Liberal. And so he took both sides of the spectrum and put the fear in there that, oh, we got to be careful how we vote because the opposite person might get in, and they divided it. And I think a system of preferential balloting would make a huge difference if people really knew that I can vote the way I want to on my first one, and then I can pass it on to the next one. And I like to use Edmonton Calder for my example on that. David Agan, the NDP, was the incumbent candidate. Liberals put in a candidate, and between the two of them, they had a huge majority of the votes, but they split it enough that Tory went up through the middle and got in there. But had the NDP or the Liberals been able to put, well, my first one is David Agan, my second one is this one, or vice versa, we would have what I call the majority of the people deciding on who actually represents them for that area. And again, that would engage people saying, no, my vote will make a difference. It's a preferential ballot. It's just not first past the post. And I really feel in all of these ideas that I've collected over the last 3 or 4 years always goes back to the principle, are the people empowered? And so often you're not, especially when we have more than two parties, and I do believe it's critical to have more than two parties because then it's a very, shortened debate when there's only two parties. And when you allow the third and the fourth party in there, it really broadens the discussion and I think helps democracy. So preferential balloting would be wonderful. The first person, the 50% plus one, would then get in, and that would make a big difference in who actually got put in there. And then one of the other ones that I just look at, and I always look at municipal government because I feel that it's much more representative of the people, and you don't have the parties that are fighting back and forth and having to stand on that. Ideas are able to come forward. But if we were to have what I call a split election date, much like the states that, you know, their two houses don't coordinate at the same time, when people are upset and they want to send a message like a by-election, if half of the MLAs were elected this year and in 2 years from now the other half were coming up, I really believe that that would give people greater freedom to say, no, I want to send a message and I'm going to send it by voting. Because the fear, and always is by the party in power, is that, you know, those guys are going to be worse. You know, don't give them power. And so we always look at it, and we vote more out of fear than a desire or opportunity to change or grasp the moment with some good ideas. And so I think that if we were to split it, people don't like voting that much, but you'd still only be voting once every 4 years as an individual, but it really would be like a by-election and you could balance things. And what would happen in 2 years from now with the opposition numbers being reduced so much, people would say, no, we understand the importance of debate, we understand the importance of representation, and those other 25% or maybe 75% of Albertans would come out and vote. And you got to realize is that we are very balanced in our philosophies and the fact that we're only talking, you know, 47, 53, 49, 51, much like the states, when you look at it, it's so close, but yet it can be so lopsided after a vote with 84, 83% going to one party. And I don't believe that that does us a lot of justice to do that. And the other thing that we need, I feel, to empower the people again is citizens' initiative referendums. You know, if people want to stop the oil sands or if they want to stop windmills, that how do you go about doing it? What can the people do? It's really very little. You can look at, you know, on your constituency basis, talk to your MLA and try and bring something up, but it's very difficult. Or maybe you want to stop taxes going up. And a lot of the moral issues would be much better solved in a referendum than a few elected people coming and dictating that, no, this is the right thing to do. But the citizens' initiative referendum, that would engage those, the doers, that want to do something, a pathway to get out, get signatures, and to get some excitement going. You know, this is our goal. I've done it several times. In order to start a party, we had to get 8,300 signatures or so. And to go out and to talk to Albertans, I engaged them, and that gave me a great step forward in the next election because I talked to many Albertans in my riding trying to get permission to start another party. And those are the type of things that open up the debate. We can go and talk to people. And so those are a few things that I think would make a major difference. And I just want to talk now a little bit, I guess, on seizing the moment, the opportunity, because as I look at it, it's so frustrating for Albertans and Canadians. The ideas are out there, but implementing them are so difficult. And I was out at Washington a couple of years ago, and I went down to the Smithsonian, and I've always loved flying. I love the discovery of flight and all that it has to do with it, and I really believe that we can learn a lot of soaring to new heights by just using the analogy of flying and what are we going to do as an individual to have that freedom, you know, of Jonathan Livingston Seagull to soar and to change that. But as I went to the Wright Brothers display, I learned a lot of new things that I didn't realize about their struggle to break the barrier of gravity. One of the first things is that the weight of the engine. There was, I think, over 3,000 engine companies going at that time, but none of them had time to develop the engine the Wright brothers said they needed. They were the first ones to use an aluminum block. Why? Because weight was critical. I didn't realize that. They didn't use a carburetor. They just used a drip system on the gas line that turned it on, came in there, and the way it went. Why? Because of weight again. But I want to talk about the balance, because to me the struggle of breaking the barrier of gravity wasn't in the lift, it was in the balance. Everybody tried to fly, but what did they do? They would get up and boom, they would tip and they would crash. Wind would come, a gust, something would take the balance out and they would crash. And what the Wright brothers did to solve that problem was they looked at the weights very carefully, and they had their aluminum block engine on this side, and then the Wright brothers sitting on the left side, and he actually laid down on a little assembly system that had pulleys and strings that went out to the end of the wings. And so by pushing one way or the other, you would torque the wings in order to try and balance. But we didn't really take off with flight until we had the ailerons, that we could really actually go out and do that. But the reason why the Wright brothers were successful, I believe, is because of the balance. And we really need to do that with democracy. The balance isn't there. It's lopsided. And when it's lopsided, who wants to get in and try to fly something when you're just going to crash and burn? And a lot of people say, well, Paul, you know, are you giving up? Is it a waste of time? What are you going to do? You know, you've lost. And I don't feel I lost. I made a major step forward. It was a great opportunity to represent the people of Carson, Tabor, Warner. I learned an awful lot. It was even more exciting, though, to represent the people of the province as the leader of the alliance. The traveling that I've got to do was just incredible, but the knowledge is there, whether it's in our education system, whether it's in our healthcare system. There's just so many answers out there, but we're not allowed to implement them. And that's how I want to kind of close, is what's important is the implementation, and how do we do that? I don't know. I've always wanted to do the research. I haven't. How many have ever heard of the crab-like mentality, that if you throw a crab in the basket, he'll struggle and work till he gets out? But if you throw a second crab in the basket, they'll fight, and as soon as they see one climbing out, they grab it and they hold it back. And our human fear of not letting someone break out and try something new, it always amazes me how people say, oh, no, don't do that. You'll ruin it for everybody. And whether we're coming up with a new vaccination, new medicine, a new operation, a procedure, you know, arthroscopic, all of them, we have so many new ideas, but in order to try it, it's so difficult. And I love medicine. I was going to be a pharmacist. But if you look back at the history of a lot of the drugs and things that were discovered, they tried them on themselves. They tried them on their family. Why? Because of the struggles. But they had the freedom of choice to do it. And I really feel that it's that freedom of choice to do something that drags us down the most. Do we have that? I love the Alberta coat of arms. Fortis et liber, strong and free. And that freedom, though, should end, I believe, when it infringes on the life, the freedoms, or the property of other people, and allow someone to try something new, and don't go after them. And I'll go back to the wheat board, because my background is a farmer. If I have the desire and I want to go to Japan, I want to go to Europe, and I want to sell my wheat or my beef or whatever it is, and I want to try and do that, why should other people be able to say, no, we don't want you to do it, you're endangering our system? And that fear of endangering what we have always seems to hold us back, and I think that that's very important that we do that. And so, in closing, I just want to say thank you very much and congratulations to SACPA. I think it's a wonderful organization. You do Southern Alberta proud by having these open debates. We need to have more of them. It's always disappointing the number of people that come out and vote. It's even more disappointing the number of people that come out and listen to discussions. When we have our debates, very few people see them. I'll ask an arbitrary question here. Who watched the provincial debate on TV? Well, maybe some people don't want to show, but less than 50%. And it was such a short time, and I always felt that after that debate, it was my first time, I was nervous. I go back to my days of wrestling and boxing. Oh, how I wished for round two and round three, to come back and have the information, knowing what he presented, because the problem that we struggle with is that we don't have enough information. We're not informed. The fear comes in, oh, I better not do that. And so we sit back and we don't, what they say, take that little bit of risk. And we need to be able to take that risk and not feel like it's going to kill the system. And I feel that the last time in that election, Albertans were put into that fearful position where Stelmach says, you know, if you do this or if you do that, this will be the results. It isn't true. We need to have opposition. That's what gives us our strength. Competition is wonderful. Opposition is great. The open discussion is there. Looking forward to your questions. And once again, thank you very much for inviting me here.
Thanks very much, Paul, for the enlightenment. We look forward to question and answer period after lunch. Enjoy the lunch in the meantime. We'll be back in 25 minutes.